she's going to be talking about costs and benefits and ethical analysis tool for short-term global health field study.
Thank you. Hi, I'm Corrine Brody from Toro University, California, and I am in the public health program. I'm an assistant professor and chair of our global health department. And our school actually encompasses a medical school, pharmacy, physician assistant, and public health. And so I like to think of my job as sort of brainwashing clinical students to think in a public health way. And as part of that, we have many dual degree and joint degree students who take public health curriculum, and they participate in a global health practicum where they actually spend some time abroad. And I have had this position for almost 2 years now, and part of this project came from my own personal reflection on our program, how it's run, and how we can do it better. So I hope you will be open to hearing my sort of healthy criticism of what we were doing and sort of some potential solutions on how to address some of those problems. And we have one of our DO and PhD students here, Katrina, who has worked on this project, and my colleague Sarah Sullivan, who is my partner in crime in the global health faculty at Toro. And I have no disclosures. So as we've all recognized, global health is a growing concept. It's a growing field of study. And actually, now if you look in the School of Public Health application SOFAS database, there's over 320 different ways to get either a degree or a certificate in global health. And 41 of those are doctoral programs. The majority of them are master's degrees. And most of them require students to take some time abroad. And as has been noted already, there's pretty clear evidence on the benefit to these medical trips and these public health, global health experiences to students. Many of them, we actually have pretty good evidence, longitudinal studies that look at the differences between the students who have gone abroad and those who haven't, and they develop careers. They're more likely to develop careers in public health. They're more likely to work with underserved populations. They're more likely to enter into primary care, which we love, and they're more likely to report just some psychological and personal benefits. And while these studies seem very positive, it is also difficult to sort of tangle some of the selection bias that's probably present in looking at students who choose to go abroad and those who don't, right? We didn't actually randomize them to their experiences, so they might have had the tendency to pick some of these things already, but we clearly see that it's promoting this kind of work in the future. And as for the impact on the partners, our partners in the field, there's clearly a gap in evidence. We don't have as many long-term studies that look at host, we call them, so we're the senders over here, and they're the host organizations, the folks that we work with all over the world. And so we don't have a lot of evidence that says what the impact on these relationships is for the host institute, and actually the gap in evidence has been noted by many different, in many different studies. And actually fewer but significant negative impacts have been identified, things like draining resources from poor institutes, due to the time required for teaching, translating, and arranging the trip logistics. And so that's something that we're trying to be really conscious of. What is the impact on our host institutions? And the place that I started when I began to sort of go down this line of inquiry and sort of have this moment of self-reflection is really, what is our moral obligation to our partner organizations, to the hosts? And this concept of benefit sharing came up in the literature, in both the bioethics literature. It's a concept that really stems from clinical trial research in developing countries. And as you know, there's been sort of a history of ethical violations in our research in developing countries, particularly with clinical trials. Who benefits from those trials? What happens when the trial's over? So that there's actually a lot of literature around the ethics of these partnerships, I guess you could call them, but really they're sort of this exploitative nature, and we want to make sure that we're completely departed from that past, which hopefully we've learned from, and that we're imagining a new way to encounter and engage with our partners in other countries. And so this concept of benefit sharing is really to counter that exploitation. And so the question is still, what is our obligation as sending institutes to our hosts? And at the minimum, right, we would want to ensure that our institutes are not worse off as a result of the collaboration. We can probably all agree on that. But that actually, maybe we should take it a step further in that we should ensure that there's actually benefit. And so that the collaboration actually improves, as we see there's so much improvement on the side of our students, we want to make sure that there's improvement on the other side. And so in our extensive review of the literature, which actually was not so extensive, there's one very obvious place to start, which is this working group on the ethical guidelines for global health training, which was called the WAIT group in 2010. I'm just wondering, since we're sort of in this room here, has anyone heard of the WAIT group? We have one, a couple people, three or four people. It was something that I hadn't heard of until I went on this sort of exploration, and it was useful in many ways, and it gave me some really good conceptual understanding of where we are in our thinking and our process. And so these were guidelines that were developed based on a literature review and then an expert summit. And so the expert summit was in London, and there was a grant from the Wellcome Trust to invite participants from both sending and host institutions to a face-to-face meeting in London to discuss these exact issues and to come up with a set of guidelines that were then published in the American Journal of Tropical Medicine and Hygiene that would be useful to kind of work through some of these ethical issues. Soon after it was published, there were several critiques that were published in response. One of them was a collaboration of four or five host institutes, sort of the large training institutes that were receiving students from other countries, from developed countries. And their main criticism was that the bidirectionality of benefits and opportunities was not fully addressed in the guidelines, and that it was really only focused on, this is a quote, training students from rich countries. And that was really the focus of the guidelines, how can we maximize our training experiences, and really didn't consider how we need to both make sure that we do no harm, but actually focus on improvement. It also has been used by several other universities as a framework. So actually there's a couple published pieces that where a university took this framework, applied it to their program, and kind of worked through some of the issues. So it's proved perhaps a useful tool to some. When we looked at the methodology, some criticisms sort of came up for us. You know, we're public health practitioners, and so immediately whenever we read an article, we scour the methodology section and think about where did they go wrong, where are the biases, where are the limitations. For us, really thinking about an expert summit where there's a face-to-face conversation between basically funders and recipients of money relationships, we thought that that probably introduced a lot of bias in terms of being able to discuss the real issues maybe that they were feeling. So a lot of these organizations and hospitals and universities that came together in London had existing relationships already in place where there was research money flowing, there was students going back and forth, and so it may be a difficult place to bring up some criticisms, and that may be why that in the guidelines this bidirectionality didn't appear, didn't emerge from that conversation. Just to give you an example, a couple examples of what the WAIT guidelines look like. So here's just three that I selected. So one of them would be clarify goals and expectations through explicit arrangements. Develop, implement regular updates and improve formal training. Consider local needs and priorities. So as you can see, our second criticism is really that the guidelines, while I think that all the dimensions of the big issues in the relationships between host and sending institutions are there, they're a bit vague. And so if you wanted to take this and apply it immediately to your program, you wouldn't exactly know necessarily where to go. Considering local needs, how do you do that? What does that mean? What does that mean in practice? How am I really going to maybe change my program or improve it based on these guidelines. And so that was really what that was really where we began with our approach and trying to figure out how might we come up with, and again, as a public health practitioner, we're very focused on measurement and evaluation and indicators. How might we develop some kind of tool that would take the weight guidelines and maybe improve upon them and then make them more practical? So we're still in progress. This is a pilot study, and we're in the needs assessment phase, but I'm going to sort of walk you through our larger project, and it's a nice time to present this because it's a great time to get feedback from you all here in the audience about what would be useful and how this might either resonate with you or not. And so really our aim in this process is to develop a tool for sending and host institutions that would improve the ability that we would improve our ability to measure and also make substantial practical improvements on the distribution of benefits and the bidirectionality of the relationship. And so we're in the needs assessment phase, as you can see here. And because this is our project, we're working with our three largest partner organizations in Ethiopia, Cambodia, and Bolivia to begin to ask some questions about what are really the dimensions of a good global health practicum experience. And also, obviously, looking at some of the host institutes we're reaching out to universities in the U.S. Who send a lot of interns and global health students abroad. And so here we are in this phase, and we're very early in it, so we'll share some preliminary results. And then I'll give you a sort of a simulation of our tool that we have. But really, the tool creation process, we think that a Delphi method might be a more appropriate methodology to use to develop this tool. How many people are familiar with the Delphi method? It's sort of a long process. If anyone's participated in it, you're like, oh no, here's another Delphi method email. I just can't take another survey. But it is usually an online survey. It's anonymous. You're asked to be part of an expert circle. And there's an iterative process, and so you get to basically feedback your thoughts and responses to several different rounds of a tool that's being created. And so it's a way that people can all the experts that have been invited to participate, which we would have to be very thoughtful about, then would be able to give feedback in an anonymous way several times. So it's not just that one moment, this is it, give all your feedback, but actually, let's see it again. Oh, it looks like, you know, we're getting more on this side instead of this side, and you might have another criticism down the line. And so we feel like that might be a good methodology for this process. And we want to make an effort in our selection of who would be a part of the expert circle to make sure that it's not just administrators. So one of the our sort of issues with the weight guidelines expert summit was that mostly it was administrators who were invited to have these discussions. But who's the one who actually hosts the intern? It's usually people on the ground, frontline staff, and physicians and other organizational people who maybe aren't the decision makers. And so really having input from all levels of the organization, I think, would be important. And then we, of course, want to pilot test and evaluate the tool until it's ready for sort of online access. And the idea would be that it would be available online so that all of us could use it in the privacy of our own offices and use it as a tool just to self-check our programs to see where we might need to improve things, but it can also be used as something where we collect data in an ongoing way, either anonymously or you can choose to submit your data in a, with your identifying information. So we've begun to do some of our host interviews internationally, and we find that the host institutes see that there are several benefits that are very tangible from our existing program. And one of them is that there's a lot of information exchange. So when students come, whatever they're bringing to the table, there's a lot that people learn from each other just because of the nature of the differences. There ends up being a lot of information exchange, whether that's about global health or about other things, and that's a positive experience. And that there's also this promise of new opportunities and linkages, which has been seen as really a positive and a benefit to the host organizations. And then you can see this list of challenges that have come up in the interviews, things like the feeling that students probably benefit more than hosts, that arranging logistics can be burdensome on the host organization, that hosts do not always have a project ready for a student to take on. Again, we don't have students do rotations or any clinical experiences. This is a global health training, and so they're working on more global health, health systems, bigger picture sort of public health issues. And so hosts do not always have that project ready when the students arrive. It's unclear commitment, the level of commitment from the sending organizations. There's not always funding for joint projects, even though there's sort of this promise of sort of, well, I'd love to have this university student come here because I'm sure down the line there'll be more. There'll be some kind of research opportunities or some kind of exchanges or some of our faculty can go there. And sometimes that doesn't happen. And so in the end, it can be a drain on the limited resources in our host countries. And so this is a very preliminary list of dimensions, but just to give you a kind of taste of what the tool might look like. So we would start with these list of dimensions that are emerging from the interviews. And you can see here, length of stay is an issue, student preparation, logistics, project definition, student skill level, oversight from the sending institution over their students. So actually having supervision, like was talked about before, how important that is to have mentorship and supervision, the level of collaboration overall between the institutes and some kind of evaluation of the program. So this is sort of an example of what the tool, this is, you know, pre-beta even, right? So this is just a sense so you could get something to feed to give us feedback on. But the tool would be something like this. You would have, you know, your online survey, everyone's taken one before, and you put in your information. How long does this typical student stay? Who arranges the logistics? How are these projects initiated? Do students undergo formal cultural competency training or some kind of training beforehand? Those types of questions. And so you would fill it out based on your program, and then you would get maybe sort of a histogram that shows you, you know, based on our information, how we would calculate where you fall in terms of what areas are weaker and stronger. And then you would get a score, and then a score for each dimension. And then the idea would be that you actually linked to practical ways to improve that area. So if your area is low in length of stay, we have some extension strategies. If you don't have the preparation with, for example, a formal memorandum of understanding or some kind of affiliated agreement that would really clarify what that partnership is on both ends, we would have some templates. And so some things exist already, some things would need to be created. Just a couple of other examples. You know, things that you can directly use that you can tailor to your organization so that when you get to the end of this program and you see where you might want to improve, that you're not left sort of wondering or scouring the web to try to figure out how to do that. We felt like we'll just link you right to it from here. There's actually, Johns Hopkins has developed a nice module on ethical challenges in global health that's free for use, and our students use it now, but there's a lot of things already that exist that maybe just aren't pulled together in a systematic way for program managers who are trying to improve their programs. And so, you know, as you can see, our goal is really to provide this practical guidance, mainly for program planners on either the host or the sending side, but also to have this sense of measurement and sort of developing indicators on what good internship programs look like in the context of benefit sharing and bidirectionality of benefits, and also to encourage this sort of awareness or self-reflection, self-assessment by sending institutes who we believe do have a moral obligation to both make sure that they're not doing harm but actually also improving. Thank you.